Just got off the phone with Twitter. They apparently they have a sales department now, and so they were trying to sell me stuff. And you know what? I told them. I said, "Listen," she asked, "are there any other questions that you might have for me?" And I said, "No." And I know that this is probably totally meaningless to anyone who is not in the executive suite in California, but I want to thank you for supporting free speech. Here's what I said. I said, "I don't support Alex Jones," and she howled. She immediately started laughing. I said, "But I do appreciate that you guys didn't get involved in all that nonsense because I support free speech, and I'm glad that you stuck by your terms of service. And I'm sure I'm probably one out of 100 people against keeping Alex Jones on the platform, but I just wanted to make sure that you knew my voice was heard." So, you know, these companies that I complain about on our shows on the Wall Network, I really do get to talk to these companies. So I do say to them, "Hey, I'm not a fan of that because I'm in the same business as Alex Jones." So welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. This is a podcast where we discuss life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is episode 4. We're already to 4. We've made it. Episode 4 here on August, what's today? The 21st. 2018. We are part of the We Are Libertarians Network. If you go to wearelibertarians.com, there's all kinds of cool things there for you and for me. For you, things like The Path to Libertarianism and other shows like The Brian Nichols Show, Boss Hog of Liberty, We Are Libertarians, but also cool things for us like the support page, which helps you support this program because we are independent media and we are trying to build something special here, and so please be a part of that. This is a brand new show, so it is imperative. I ask you 3 things, because as I said yesterday, and I'm going to repeat it every show, this is a commitment. So I'm adding an hour of my day, an hour to my day for the We Are Libertarians Network and to bring you shows. So this 20 minutes takes at least, I would say, another hour to produce. So to put in that effort, I want to know that it's worth it, and you can do that 3 ways. You can share on social media with your friends and say, "Hey, this show's really cool. This guy's great. Listen to him. He's very smart and intelligent and handsome and pretty and single." And so number 2, send us an email, editor@wearelibertarians.com. I had one listener do that, and I thank you for encouraging me. And number 3, join the Patreon and mark in your donation somewhere that you're joining because you love the addition of this extra 20 to 30 minutes to your day. So the reality is that every show costs money, and the shows that make money stick around, and the shows that don't make money and don't get ratings and don't get interaction with the fans, they go away. So, gosh, I think we've probably here on the show had 20 shows, and we're really only actively doing 3, 4. At this point, my co-host Mittens is knocking the microphone here. Now, you may notice there is no bed of music. So I was thinking as I was coming in, I was like, you know what? I'm putting so much production into We Are Libertarians and making it sound so big. I'd rather just kind of have like a small intimate vibe with you guys. Can I get intimate with you here on the Chris Spangle Show? I don't think I introduced myself. I am Chris Spangle, if you didn't get that hint. I listen to a ton of different podcasts. I think I have 1,200 different podcasts in my podcatcher. The Downcast app does its best. It barely functions with that many shows. But when I'm doing show prep, I like to go and search through all the different shows and find different topics. And I listened to one called Get Off My Lawn with Gavin McInnes after he got banned from Twitter. And I kind of like the style where it's just kind of him talking. So, you know, instead of trying to do a big production like we do with We Are Libertarians, maybe we'll make this just a little daily chat. So we'll see. Or I'll change my mind. I'm just testing things out here. So let me know what you like. Let me know what you don't like. I'll let you know what I like and don't like. So, on with the show. Man, so for those of you who don't know, I'm not going to give all the details, but I do work in the broadcasting industry, and I work around comedy, and, you know, I would never want anything I say to be held against anyone that pays me money, that's for sure. But I do have a fair bit of experience now working in the comedy industry, and being in Indiana, I was naturally alerted to this story out of Purdue University. And it is this comedian who I've never heard of. I don't know who, what's this character's name? Andy Gross? I've never seen him, but he's doing college tours. And so for those of you who don't know, I listened to this great interview with Carrot Top, believe it or not, on the Barry Katz podcast after I saw Carrot Top in Vegas. And I've got to say, he was excellent. My mom was like, I've got a great surprise. I got us front row tickets to Carrot Top. And I was like, oh, Mom, you shouldn't have. And we went on Mother's Day this year, and I've got to say, it was a fantastic show. It was really, really good. So if you're in Vegas, go see Carrot Top. I've never seen anybody use the stage like an instrument before. It's very, very cool. And so he was talking about how he got on. There's these big auditions where these comedians go out, and they basically audition to go on this college circuit. And then what you do is if you're on the circuit, you know, you're fairly clean, then you get to go to all these different colleges. I saw several different comedians at a local college here named Butler. When I was in school, I went to IUPUI, so we didn't have comedians come to our school. We barely had grade point averages. But at Butler, which is the hoity-toity rich white kid school, they had comedians all the time over at the rec center. So I'd go and see them, and these comedians get paid tons of money. Like, if you're working at a club, you're probably somewhere between $1,000 and $8,000 a weekend. But if you're working at a college, it's like 5 or 10. I mean, it's like base is 5. It's really, really good money. And there are, man, I've met hundreds of comedians now, and nobody wants to work colleges. And you saw why here in West Lafayette, Indiana, at Purdue, which is a lesser school than IU. And so they have this thing called the Boiler Gold Rush event, where basically people are going to rush for sororities, I would guess. I mean, if you want to know all about that, then previous lives of the show, you could probably get that information. So they had thousands of students, as the Indianapolis Star writes, but this year the event ended with thousands of students bonding together in opposition to a comedian accused of sexually harassing a student leader in front of more than 7,000 of her peers, and the university vowing to never associate with him again. So they apologized to the students. He's never going to work again. He'll never be there. So students in attendance, including freshman Andora Fess of San Francisco, said Gross's show was unfunny. Andora Fess of San Francisco said Gross's show was unfunny and distasteful throughout, but he took it a troubling turn for the worse when he called a student up to the stage to serve as a volunteer. He brought up one of our supers, which is a leader in our BGR orientation. He proceeded to harass her, Fess explains. He made her stand closer and closer to him and made a joke about giving him an erection, making his pants seem to say, "Let me out," referring to his genitals. Then he made the student stand back-to-back despite apparent discomfort. While standing back-to-back, Fess said Gross made the student touch his upper thigh and made a joke that at least he's getting a feel. In the beginning, it was disbelief and extreme discomfort. I know I was pretty angry and just in shock that this seemingly very famous person was treating women like this at a school, and he made to continue to make jokes at the expense of women. He made a Matt Lauer joke. It was just very distasteful, and once he started doing that, the people in the audience started to get up. He came into the crowd, and none of the women would volunteer, and he just kept making sexual jokes even as the crowd was leaving. So then the Center for Advocacy, Response, and Education at Purdue gets involved, and CARE was contacted earlier this evening regarding a performance. As a result, a CARE advocate responded to campus to offer support to the students. If you were impacted by this evening's event and needed to speak with someone, please remember that support is available 24/7. So they brought in counselors because of a joke. And so the Daily Mail actually had video of the joke, which I'll play here in just a moment. So here now to Twitter, the brilliant hashtag Andy Gross is Gross was launched. If anyone saw the show at Purdue tonight, Allison says, A-L-L-I-S-Y-N, I hope that you can join me in boycotting Andy Gross. We need to recognize sexual harassment for what it is and not let it go unpunished. No means no, no matter where you are and who is watching. Huge Ryan writes, huge discomfort at Andy Gross's performance at BGR. Very uncomfortable sexual jokes. Participants crying afterwards. Tears in the audience as well. Many started walking out. Eventually, all did. Well, yeah, they had to leave the building, you dum-dum. Superstar apologizing. This isn't BGR. This isn't us. Leah writes, pretty sure Purdue students are willing to put our rivalry with IU on hold so that we can put all of our vengeful energy into ending Andy Gross's career. Okay, so this is another one of those situations where tweets become the news, and we have, you know, brilliant 18-year-old children threatening to end someone's career over a joke that he's made about 850 times. So he eventually put out a statement. Andy Gross is profoundly sorry that students at Purdue University were offended during his show this past weekend. This weekend's acts for many years. So you know, he says that he's sorry that they were offended. He's done this act for many years without complaint, including venues such as the Laugh Factory, the Comedy Store, the Improv, and dozens of venues throughout the U.S. and abroad, the statement reads. Andy has never been accused of sexual misconduct or harassment, which sexual misconduct, by the way, that's like a new term. Sexual misconduct, to me, is one of those words that is like a media term that, you know, harassment is verbal, assault is physical, but misconduct is kind of like a word that is mysterious and, well, we don't know exactly what happened, but there was misconduct. So it's one of those words that you really, when you read that word, you should be careful about because it's a sort of a concoction that doesn't really mean much. Andy was oblivious and naive about the current environment on college campuses. Dude, no, you're not. All right, I'm calling that a lie because any comedian, especially one that's working on college campuses, is aware of what's going on. He sincerely regrets causing any offense or discomfort to any student participating. He has chosen to no longer perform on college campuses in the future. I'm guessing the company he was working for also helped him make that decision. Further, he plans to change the parts that upset Purdue students. Again, Andy Gross sincerely regrets causing any discomfort. So if you actually watch the video, it is pretty uncomfortable. And it's not uncomfortable because he's being gross. It's uncomfortable because she's uncomfortable and he didn't see that. And when you're doing a performance, you are taking into account the way that the audience is reacting or the way other people are reacting. And it's always a real challenge if you bring somebody up from the audience. You don't know how they're going to react to what you're doing. And so you really have to read their body language. And she was not having any of it. Like, she was not having fun with it. I don't know why she even went up on stage. That sounds like she's asking for it. That's not what I mean. But, like, I don't know. She just seemed from the second in the video when she got up there that she was uncomfortable. And so he basically puts they're back to back, and she is apparently supposed to pick a card, and he is supposed to guess her card, and he purposely guesses it wrong and then says, oh, I got two... I was two away, but at least I got a felt up or something along those lines. I'm terrible at repeating the joke, and the girl is like literally like their butts are touching, so he can make the joke of their cheek to cheek, and so there's physical contact there. And then he says, "Put your hand on my leg," and so like she puts her hand down sort of like on his side above the knee area, and so it's the most unsexual touch I've ever seen. I haven't seen a touch that unsexual since my last date. And so she's clearly not enjoying herself, and not in a way that it's like, I mean, maybe she felt sexually harassed, but like watching it, I felt awkward because it was just bad. Like it wasn't. And so the Indy Star put, in their article, their follow-up, how the joke is supposed to go.
Actually, it wasn't, no.
Really?
Really, it wasn't. It was ace.
Let me see what it is.
This isn't. That is the Three of Hearts.
Yeah, you're really
wrong. Well, I was only off by two. And I got a free feel out of it.
So now in that instance, the girl that is participating in it is laughing, and, you know, it's a throwaway line. It's certainly not intended, like, it's not intended to even be sexual harassment. If this guy were being lewd and lascivious, like, if this were John Fox, then I'd go, all right, I'm going to look more into the story. But when you see the joke performed in another setting, you go, okay, this guy did not intend to make this woman feel uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form. And I do think that when it comes to these instances of the Me Too movement, intent matters somewhat, right? Like Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby are far worse offenders, or Matt Lauer, for instance, than this guy, right? Because his intent is not, he is creating a little bit of awkwardness so he can make the joke land a little bit better. But he's not actually doing it for any kind of sexual pleasure. She's voluntarily participating in a comedy routine. You know, and comedy works through novelty. It works through cutting through tension. And so if you're going to do comedy, you've got to create some tension. You've got to create some awkwardness, or you've got to come up with an idea or a phrase and present it in a new way. And that's how you actually make jokes and how you make comedy. So if she was genuinely horrified by this, then obviously you have to respect those feelings. You have to respect her opinion. But I also look at this and I go, the reaction to this is so ridiculous. You're bringing grief counselors out. You're threatening this guy's career. And so it's one of those things where it's like the girl is clearly uncomfortable. She didn't like being a part of this routine, and you have to respect her feelings. But the guy wasn't intending to do, he didn't want that. I guarantee that. Like, if you sat down and said, I feel horrible, I'm so sorry, this is not my intention. You know, he's not Harvey Weinstein, and so you're not going to ruin his career. But what happens in these cases is that it starts to build on Twitter, and so there's a game of one-upmanship. And so it ends up that there's mobs threatening to tear things down. And so the problem on college campuses is that mob-like mentality, that mob-like behavior. You know, I am all for removing these Confederate statues. I think if you should go watch Mitchell Andrews' speech on the removal of the I saw where it was when I was in New Orleans, but not Grant, what's the other one? Robert E. Lee. Lee Circle. They took the statue down. And you know, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't want to erase history. And like Condoleezza Rice made the point that, you know, if you want your history in front of your face so you never repeat those mistakes, if you hide history that's unpleasant, then you risk that. It's like, that makes sense. But then, like, I learned the history of these statues, and this one particularly on the UNC campus, the University of North Carolina, somebody Sam, and basically it was, you read the dedication, and it's like this guy is using the N-word basically in the dedication and talking about the lost cause. The whole point of these statues, the reason that they were all put up in the early 1900s was to remind black people of their of white supremacy, basically. And so the whole point of these statues is racist and racially motivated, and so the intent is wrong. And it's not intended to honor positive values. It's intended to remind people of their place. And so I can't support that whatsoever. And so I'm all in favor of removing statues, but I'm not in favor of doing it via mob like they did on the campus of the University of North Carolina last night. I just, you know, in a civilized society, you don't just go and tear things down that you don't like. You don't get a mob together and just go act. That's not how you act in a society founded on reason or logic or laws or rule of law. That's, you know, you're technically vandalizing, and nobody's going to press charges on you because it's an ugly thing. But at the end of the day, you work through the process to actually change things. So I just don't like mob rule, and I don't think any of us should either. And so, you know, the reality is that college campuses, I mean, I wonder, and I don't know if maybe there are some older listeners who would write in and talk about this, but I wonder how much of college campuses versus like the late 60s, like what's the comparison? Because obviously there was, there were people getting killed on college campuses in the 60s in the anti-war protest in Kent State. And obviously with the civil rights era. But, protesting comedy is not the same thing as protesting Vietnam. That is for certain. Comedians are not even going to college campuses anymore. And so this is just the entire industry of comedy is really hurting because the savings rate is going up, and so people are staying home. And you think about your own behavior. It's like, do we as a couple want to hire a babysitter, go out to a comedy show, have a 50-50 chance on that person being terrible, spending $80 because of the two-drink minimum? So people go, no, let's just order a pizza, stay home, watch, the new Chappelle special on Netflix. So the comedy industry, even in the last 5 years that I've been around it, is really hurting in a pretty significant way. And it's very sad because stand-up comedy, starting with Lenny Bruce especially, but stand-up comedy, comedy of all forms in its history is a laboratory to say things that need to be said, but you can't say in polite society. And it's an art form when done right. Like, I don't think that Stephen Colbert is, he's doing some version of art, but like Stephen Colbert is just kind of pandering. Like, there's no cleverness to just making a joke about how stupid Trump and Republicans are, and then the whole audience claps and then kind of goes, ha, 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 as Ben Shapiro calls it, clapter or clafter. You know, you're clapping and laughing, but you're not really like, it's not funny. And I thought that was kind of a funny thing, and it signifies a lot of what's happening on like Comedy Central and these late night shows now. But you go back to somebody like Lenny Bruce, or and who is the guy that everybody thinks Alex Jones is? Bill Hicks, Sam Kinison, George Carlin. You know, these people were on the front lines. I mean, George Carlin, for heck's sake, trying to make this a clean show, went to the Supreme Court for the 7 dirty words you can't say on television, because he was like, why can't I say these on television? And so, these were pioneers of free speech. Comedians are the ones that really are voicing discomfort with modern life, whatever that modern life may be. And if they don't have the freedom to do that, then we're all in trouble. And I think it is regrettable. And just like political speech, you know, you can't have political. So you have free speech zones on college campuses. You have an article that I'll put in the show notes. Hate speech is not free speech. What was this group? Let's see. The Higher Educational Council of San Antonio. American colleges and universities have always embraced diversity. Let me go to the article around this. That might give me a little bit more. So campusreform.org has a story, and it's basically hate speech is not free speech, insist college presidents. A group of 23 institutions of higher learning in San Antonio penned an open letter this month declaring that hate speech and inappropriate messages are not legitimate forms of free speech. Well, that's not true. As we're going to talk about on We Are Libertarians here in roughly 2 hours, you know, there is a difference between physical action and words. And we're going to talk about the non-aggression principle on episode 308 of We Are Libertarians. Hate speech may not be acceptable speech, but it's not speech that you can ban. They are legitimate forms of free speech. I completely disagree, because the way that you truly counteract hate speech is by countering with better speech. I think you're going to be far more effective encountering Alex Jones by refuting his conspiracy theories than making up stories about him and banning him from the platform. It's something called the Streisand effect, where with the Streisand effect, you essentially end up magnifying the problem, because Barbara Streisand had this photo taken of her beach and said, this is an invasion of my privacy, sued the guy, and it went from being viewed and downloaded 70 times to like millions of times. So her use of the law brought attention to this. So I completely disagree with this, and it's just a shame. And you have to wonder, like, how many of these people are, it's like Vietnam and the civil rights era, there was a legitimate cause there. There was a cause of peace. There was a cause of rights. Like, the moms that are on college campuses now what are they standing for? Like, what is the greater principle? What is the actual thing that they are standing for? Tolerance? Because if you listen to students who were at UNC last night, as they were walking by, they were heckled and called whitey and you better get out of here before we beat your ass. Like, while holding signs decrying racism. So you might want to read your own sign. So this is from Inside Edition, and this is just a report. For those of you who aren't aware about some of the bigger names that just won't even do college campuses anymore, this is published on November 25th, 2015, why some of the most famous comedians are skipping college campuses.
College kids now are so politically correct.
Is there a war on comedy? America's top comedians say there is, and they're fighting back. Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock are among legendary comics who have stopped performing on college campuses because they say some students just can't take a joke. And Amy Schumer has been forced to defend her brand of edgy humor.
Go to LA. Go. Everyone is hot there. My arms register as legs there. They're just...
Filmmaker Courtney Belaker even made a documentary about the issue. Can we take a joke?
I think a lot of comics don't want to play colleges because they feel that the environment is too PC, and I don't think that that's good for comedy. I don't think it's good for college students.
Students at UC Berkeley protested when Bill Maher gave the commencement speech last year, angry over his jokes about Muslims.
You don't have to be a liberal, although, come on, it's Berkeley. I think I can speak freely here. I mean, I hope I can.
And it's not just college campuses. Comedian Gilbert Gottfried was fired as the voice of the Aflac Duck just an hour after tweeting a joke about the 2011 Japanese tsunami.
You'd think like I was some like foreign dictator or some gangster or killer.
When this sketch about America's trillion-dollar debt to China was broadcast on Jimmy Kimmel Live,
should we allow the Chinese to live?
Yes!
There were so many protests, he was forced to publicly apologize.
I'm very sorry that I bothered you or upset any of you.
least sincere apology. I love Jimmy Kimmel. I know that he's a leftist nut job, blah, 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 but and he hates Trump and whatever. But, like, he's such a shit poster. And then after he says, I'm sorry if I bothered or upset any of you, he bows like he's in saying hi in China.
Jerry Seinfeld put the issue in a nutshell.
There's a creepy PC thing out there that really bothers me.
Let's play Jerry's talk about political correctness.
Welcome.
Let me pause this. So you have the dean of comedy, Jerry Seinfeld, who is the type of guy that loves the theory of comedy and loves to like sit and wax on about the theory of comedy. And so, you know, probably not a conservative, but I thought his opinion on The Late Show with, which one is this? Late Night with Seth Meyers was fairly interesting. 30-second commercial, of course, played. So here we go.
I do think supposed to push the line, push towards the lines of the medium. There are more people now who will let you know if they think you went over the line than ever before.
Don't I know it?
I mean, you have to feel the same way about comedy.
Yeah, but they keep moving the lines in for no reason.
Right.
I do this joke about the way people need to justify their cell phone. I need to have it with me because people are so important.
Right.
You know, I said, well, they don't seem very important the way you scroll through them like a gay French king. You know, just... Well...
That's very offensive to the gay French king.
Well, I did this line recently in front of an audience. And comedy's where you can kind of feel like an opinion. And they thought, what do you mean gay? What are you talking about gay? What are you saying gay? What are you doing? What do you mean? You know? And I thought, are you kidding me? I mean, we can't even... I could imagine a time, and this is a serious thing, I can imagine a time where people say, well, that's offensive to suggest that a gay person moves their hands in a flourishing motion, and you now need to apologize. I mean, there's a creepy PC thing out there that really bothers me.
But you can also screw up.
Yes,
you can also screw up. And, you know, it happens once in a blue moon, and you hear about it on Twitter halfway, you know, just as soon as the magazine has hit the internet. And sometimes we put the cover out early, and the covers court controversy even more than the cartoons do.
Yes.
And we hear about it right away.
It's interesting how that ripple can...
I don't know why they didn't put him on the video, but I believe this is David Remnick, who is with The New Yorker.
Sort of start. And then do you have a sense, when a controversy starts, do you then look back at the work and go, wait, did we make a mistake, or is this...
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you have half a brain, you're going to you give it a second thought.
When was that? Tell us about
that. Well, this, I had to be on television all the time.
What?
So you did go on TV and defend this.
I had to go on CNN to explain this, and it's never a good moment, A, when you're on television.
It's the cover where it's Michelle and Barack Obama fist bumping in the Oval Office, and they were dressed like jihadists. It was a very controversial cover.
And explaining a joke. And B, when the guy on CNN is asking you, well, that could have been on the cover of a Nazi magazine. You know, thanks a lot.
My mother
is watching this show.
Explain and defend is not apologize. Did you?
No, I didn't apologize.
Okay, have you ever done that?
Apologize?
Yeah.
No.
So then you've never felt that you've gone over the line, pushed it, but not...
No, I'm saying, but we have these conversations in the office all the time. We do get, you know, Barry Blitt, who did this cartoon and does a lot of our political...
He's
fantastic.
Yeah.
But a lot of his sketches go over the line in a way that you know, it's important for him to go too far to see where the line is, if such a line exists. You know, should there be a line? I don't know. But sometimes there's a misfire. I got a misfire today. I won't describe it, but it was... You know,
what does that mean? You got a misfire today.
It was a sketch. It was a sketch about a possible cover about the Vanity Fair cover recently.
Oh, okay, there you go.
But it didn't work.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work,
that's I would like to know what it was.
You're not going
to
get it.
Now you, as long as we're on this subject, which I think is very relevant, you said the other day, I saw a thing. I think it was on Instagram, you're not going to make any jokes about Caitlyn Jenner.
I said that day I wasn't. You know, I don't...
Oh, that day.
No, but I don't want to... Again, now, Caitlyn Jenner is a person who will continue to do things in the public eye, and she will be as open to jokes as everybody else. But as far as that cover in that moment, I sort of thought that was a wonderful moment, and that wasn't a time to make a joke. So.
Oh, okay.
But I don't want to think Caitlyn Jenner can't go around doing whatever she wants the rest of her life and thinking she's not going to show up in a monologue.
Okay, good.
Very clear about that.
All right, good. Yeah. I feel better now.
Yeah, there's nobody gets carte blanche on late night.
So I think David Remnick makes a very good point in that you have to give artists a chance to breathe. You have to give them a chance to take risks and fail. And I think politicians should have that same freedom. And I think, you know, there are just some things where it's like repeat offenders. And I do have some sympathy for the constant arguments against Alex Jones, where it's like, how many chances are you going to give the guy? I'm like, enough that I'll turn him off once he's crossed that line. But I'm not going to tell people that they can't listen to Alex Jones because I'm not an insane person who believes that I should tell people what they can't read or can't think. I'll tell you what you should read or what you should think, and then you can voluntarily make the choice as to whether or not engage in that dialogue or thought or piece of art or whatever. And that's what adult life is about. Adult life, you college students, is about wrestling with things that are unpleasant. And I think when we tell our artists and our comedians and our musicians and our politicians and people who are in public life that they're not allowed to fail, that they're not allowed to take risks because if they do fail, their life is over, we're going to destroy your career, then what you get is safe, easy. You know, the corporate BS, the inauthentic crap that we all rebel against. And so if you don't want authentic, inauthentic crap that is produced by Hollywood, you want edgy stuff, then you've got to give people a chance to fail. And I think likewise, the media has to stop treating 14-year-olds on Twitter who are having a temper tantrum, whatever their chronological age may be, their temperament is 13. Let's stop treating those people as if they have... I mean, they're not people that need to be held up as an example of mainstream thought. Like, just because someone has an overblown emotional reaction to something, it doesn't mean that that is the way that most people felt. There has to be some majoritarianism in the way that things are covered. And there isn't. There just isn't anymore. And everything is so literal. Everything is just so, like, by the book and literal, and it's, like, an I almost said it. I try not to say that anymore. A very literal person, their dream. So on to some of the undercover news. Now, as you know, I am doing a segment here on the show and on We Are Libertarians called Undercover News. It's at our website where you can submit some stories. The mainstream media, the corporate media that plays it safe, that covers only the things that get your attention, and they miss so much. And they've found those profit centers, and what we try to do is bring you stories that may not get a lot of coverage, or we just think are stories that you might find interesting. Humanprogress.org is one of my absolute favorite sites, and like when I hear stories like today, and you know, another member of the media here in Indianapolis, their career was ended because of something they said, although it's not being reported that way. Read between the lines, Hoosiers. It just depressed me because it's like we're creating a society with no boundaries, no reasonable limits. And so, you know, as a content creator, it's like you can't play it safe because if you do play it safe, it doesn't even matter. It's like, you know, Gilbert Gottfried, like 2 weeks after 9/11, made a horrible 9/11 joke on the Hugh Hefner roast. And then, you know, the night of the tsunami made that joke. And it's like, too far, dude. You got to know the limits. You know, and so, but that's what Gilbert's known for, is crossing the lines. But everybody kind of knew 10 years ago what the lines were. 5 years ago, we knew what the lines were. A year ago, we knew what the lines are. Now, everybody's so hysterical that you don't know where the lines are. And it doesn't matter even if you do everything the right way all the time. It's still the mob comes for you. And that's a very dangerous place to be. And that's a very crappy world to live in. So I love seeing humanprogress.org. I mark them first on Facebook because I love seeing the positive news. And what they do is they just mark all the stories of human achievement and growth and prosperity that exist in the world today. And it's a very positive thing to see in your Facebook feed when you log on. So I highly recommend it. How humanity won the war on famine. And they talk about Mao Zedong between 58 and 1962 had something called the Great Leap Forward. And in that, he killed 23 to 55 million people in China by starving them to death. But they talk about how now we have basically beat famine, you know, war, pestilence, and famine. And for the first time in human history, the Malthusian nightmare doesn't exist. I'm running short on time. I'll explain that some other time. But the global average population weighted food supply per person rose from 2,200 calories in 1961 to 2,800 calories in 2013. To put these figures in perspective, the U.S. Department of Agriculture recommends the moderately active person, men, 2,200 to 28 calorie, and women, 1,800 to 2,000. In sub-Saharan Africa, food supply rose from 2,000 calories in 1961 to 2,400 calories in 2013. Put differently, the world's poorest regions enjoy access to food that is roughly equivalent to that of the Portuguese in the early 1960s. In fact, scientists from the African Population and Health Research Center in Kenya estimate that in 4 out of 24 African countries surveyed, obesity prevalence among urban women exceeded 20%. It ranged between 10% and 19% in 20 other countries. They also have like a weird culture where, you know, badunkadunks are valued. And so I saw in Vice once, they just like stuff their women like to make them bigger. It's crazy. It's kind of torture, honestly. So what accounts for the growing access to food, other than editor's note, capitalism? First, agriculture productivity has greatly improved due to more scientific methods of farming, access to plentiful and much improved fertilizers and pesticides, and new high yield and disease resistant plants. The main hero of the story was 1970 Nobel Peace Prize winner Norman Borlaug. In the mid-20th century, Borlaug worked with the governments of Mexico, India, and Pakistan to introduce a combination of modern agricultural production techniques and his new high-yield wheat varieties. Second, the world has grown much richer, and people can afford to buy more food. the average global income per person per day rose from $3.7 $3.70 in 1900 to $35 in 2000. Those are both in 2018 dollars. Third, food has become cheaper. GMOs. Fifth, the spread of democracy and a free press ensures that governments are more accountable and human rights abuses more widely reported. From the Foundation for Economic Education, another great libertarian resource, ethanol is terrible for health and the environment, but the government keeps backing it. They write, when the elected officials and bureaucrats who run a government want to stack the deck in favor of a politically connected special interest, they have three main ways that they can go about it. They can subsidize the special interest, often using taxpayer cash. They can penalize the competition of the special interest, often through tariffs. They can mandate that people do business with the special interest. In the case of ethanol, the U.S. has done all three. So there is a new EPA study that the Daily Caller has outlined, and it says, evidence since the enactment of the EISA suggests an increase in acreage planted with soybeans and corn, with strong indications from observed changes in land use that some of this increase is a consequence of increased biofuel production. Man, I got bored just saying that, let alone listening to it. I apologize. The ethanol mandate has negatively affected water quality, with greater biofuel production resulting in more harmful algae blooms and hypoxia. While most algae is harmless to water, some forms, such as the kind produced in Lake Erie from biofuel feedstock, has emitted toxic chemicals into the water. This harmful algae can consume the oxygen in the water, a process known as hypoxia, killing other wildlife. They're dealing with the worst red tide, which is something similar down in Florida, and a lot of it has to do with sugar and the government's overinflation, basically the limits on sugar, and it's the government's fault is what you need to know. Essentially, the study found that biofuel mandates are boosting production of corn and soybeans, and using ethanol in lieu of gasoline resulted in worse air emissions. Let's see. Final story. I'll cut that one for time. Nabisco uncages animal crackers after 116 years. So basically, PETA is now designing animal cracker boxes. So apparently, Nabisco, everybody's had animal crackers. You get the little red box, the Barnum and Bailey's animal crackers, and they come in a little box, and it's got like this quaint-looking design. And apparently, they hadn't ever changed that design. I mean, it's been there from the beginning. And PETA took exception to it because it shows basically old-timey cages with lions and an elephant in it, and forced them to redesign the box. A zebra, an elephant, a lion, a giraffe, and a gorilla are out roaming amongst the grass and trees now. The change comes at the urging of animal rights organization the PETA, who said that in April 2016, it pointed out that Nabisco's parent company, Mondelez International, that circuses often beat, shock, and chain and whip animals to intimidate them into performing tricks. Other cruel practices include tearing baby animals away from their mothers and keeping animals in cages and chains. I didn't see in the report that animal crackers were made out of those tortured animals. I'm not a food scientist, but I do think that animal crackers are probably not made out of tortured elephants, lions, or bears. I don't think that Nabisco has any part in that, any of that. PETA, here's the problem with that. They are basically threatening. It's like, what is going on in society today is that you have these roaming mobs of people basically roaming outside your door saying, we're going to give you bad PR if you don't do what we say. And the left and radicals in any party, but you know, there are more radicals on the left, it seems, are much more aggressive. And people who are radicals are always louder. And so they always come from a stance of, do you support elephant torture? Well, no, we just like this box. I mean, it's tradition, and it's, you know, pretty well designed, and kids love it because it looks like a little, you know, you got a little zebra on there. Well, but do you believe in ripping elephant babies from their mothers? Well, we don't do that. We just make crackers. Well, you know, and so impossible to argue that straw man. And so these companies just go, you know what? I'm not going to sit here for the next 25 years or in perpetuity get the bad press that comes with pissing off PETA. And so let's just change the design. You know, it bothers it. Do I care what is on the box? I don't really care at all. I don't. I have no nostalgia attached to it. If it's got animals roaming free, whatever. You know, and kids don't care because it's animal crackers. But I do have a problem with private organizations threatening other private organizations with intimidation tactics to force them to do something that they don't want to do. So that's a problem. All right, so let's wrap up. This show is brought to you by our Patreon subscribers. If you believe in this show, if you believe in what we're doing at We Are Libertarians, if you got anything out of this episode, then please consider joining our Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. It's on the sidebar there. Or you can go to patreon.com/wearelibertarians and you can donate. Harry will be here in just a couple hours. We're going to do We Are Libertarians. We're going to talk about Lester Holt basically lying about Alex Jones. It's like stunning what CNN and, well, it's not stunning what CNN and Lester Holt did to Alex Jones and how they misrepresented him. So please tune in. If you're not getting that show, then check it out at wearelibertarians.com. And with that, I bid you adieu, and I say I bid you adieu. See, this is why people from Indiana shouldn't speak French. We can barely speak English. So, all right, take care of yourself, and I'll see you tomorrow.